Welcome to Truth Culture Life at Catholic Spirit Radio. I am Royce Hood. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have got two special guests today. We have Renee Purcell. Did I pronounce your last name right, Renee?
Yes.
Awesome. And she is with the Fire Foundation. And is that the, technically, is that the Fire Foundation of, is it Central Illinois?
Yes.
Did I got that right also?
Yeah. Good
I'm
job.
I'm on a roll today. I usually get things wrong right off the cuff. So I'm disappointed in myself actually, because I'm so used to getting things wrong that when I get them right, I don't quite know what to do. Okay. So tell us a little bit. We've had you on before. I'm pretty sure, at Catholic Spirit Radio. You've got this Fire Foundation, which is amazing. And tell us a little bit about the Fire Foundation, a little bit about yourself, and then you've got some big updates to share for us.
Yeah. So the Fire Foundation, FIRE stands for Funding for Inclusion in Religious Education. And the Fire Foundation of Central Illinois is one of 10 affiliates nationwide. The Fire Foundation started over 25 years ago in Kansas City. And we started here in Central Illinois in 2019. And we have two pillars. We advocate for inclusion for all learners in our Catholic schools. And then we raise funds to help the schools supplement the needs that they need to meet everybody's needs.
Wow, that is awesome. Yeah, that, my wife and I talk about this all the time, and Catholic education is so important. And we hear about it all the time. You hear about it when the churches are raising money for their particular schools and everything else. And it's just so heartbreaking to know that there are some children out there that are, you know, for whatever reason, excluded from receiving Catholic education. It's absolutely heartbreaking. And it's been going on for a long, long time. It's so unnecessary. Like, I get there's costs, and I just think it's just a matter of, maybe it's a matter of lay people getting together and figuring it out.
It's a cultural mindset. You know, that's basically what we do, is you have to just talk about it over and over again because people can't envision it, but it's totally possible. It doesn't necessarily cost more if you just teach all students, like, across the board with the tools that we try and provide our partner schools with.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way to look at it. Have you seen the Cabrini movie by any chance?
I have.
I think about, Mother Cabrini, Saint Cabrini.
Yeah.
And she I don't think she would have turned anybody away.
No.
She was 100% about education and helping people in need. And just her example is one that, like, I don't know, that movie just really struck a chord with me in terms of what she was able to accomplish.
Absolutely. And the perseverance, that's what, like, I needed that, just keep going, trust in the Holy Spirit. Like, that's what my husband and I say all the time. We feel like we were guided by the Holy Spirit to start this whole thing. We prayed about it, and it's a big undertaking, but it seems to always move forward and work out, and people seem to come into our lives when we need them. You know, it's just amazing.
Well, that's awesome. You're definitely doing great work with the Fire Foundation of Central Illinois, and you're really just getting started in many ways. So tell us a little bit about the goal. Now, my understanding is you're working with three schools initially. Is that correct?
Yes, we have three partner schools, St. Jude in Peoria, Corpus Christi in Bloomington, and then the high school of St. Thomas More in Champaign. And now we've added a fourth school, Holy Cross in Champaign. But our ultimate goal is to provide some financial assistance so that schools can provide professional development, assistive technology, things like that. So we've been slowly but surely raising funds through COVID and everything else, and we finally reached our goal to be able to provide grants to our pilot schools. And so that's the big exciting news, is what we've been working on and working for. And in the beginning of the year, we were able to grant $15,000 to combine $5,000 each to our pilot schools.
And what will that money be used for? Do you know?
Yes, I do. So many of the schools are wanting professional development for the faculty. So learning more about how to accommodate ADHD, dyslexia. These are all of the Catholic schools. Here's the thing. They're already doing inclusion. We just need to give them the tools so that it can be more efficient, you know? And so learning about just those simple learning disabilities is one. Executive functioning, training for the teachers. St. Jude has asked for a program called Branching Minds, which helps them input data and then place kids in the needs that they, certain needs that they might need, so that it kind of takes the guessing work out of where they need supports. And then St. Thomas More has asked for some technologies to help in there. They have quite a few students with needs, and so having all of the technologies available for those students is part of what that money is going for.
Wow. So the needs really vary probably based on the school, and maybe, I don't know if the word sophistication of the particular school or what, you know, what they already have.
Right.
Some schools probably are more equipped than others to get started or to advance. What is your ultimate goal with the Fire Foundation of Central Illinois? Are you hoping to just be in a few schools? What's the game plan?
In a dream world, I would love for our diocese to put inclusion in their strategic plan across the diocese for sacramental prep, so that all people can participate in the church and also in our parish schools. The biggest thing, and what I think is a hard stop for people, is the people, like needing the funding to have a special education teacher. But there are ways that we can accommodate that without thinking, oh my gosh, we're going to need all these salaries and all this money. There are programs. We're going to send one of our teachers through the PI program, which is a program for inclusive education through the University of Notre Dame. And essentially, that would make that school have a specialist, you know, and then you're not worrying about trying to find a special educator. So I think just creating awareness and just including it in there, including inclusion, and then it will become what the norm is. Oh, I can't hear you.
Okay. There we go. I'm back. I love what you're doing. I feel like the training, that's probably low hanging fruit, you know, training existing staff with some additional tools that they can incorporate into what they're already doing. That to me seems like a simple way for some schools to get started. If they're not equipped financially to bring in a specialist, then absolutely, they can at least start increasing their capacity by educating their staff and training their staff. That's huge. Having those technical resources for tracking and for, you know, best practices, so to speak, that's a low hanging fruit too. I have to say, like, I get a little bit disappointed sometimes. It's so amazing to see when there's like a big appeal that comes out for, hey, we need a new school, we need a new playground, we need a new church, or whatever the case might be. Like, the money comes, mm-hmm, and we're able to raise all sorts of money for all sorts of things. And I can't help but to wonder, is some of the issue here, there's just hasn't been that fire lit in terms of a sense of urgency. When you're the kid that's being excluded from Catholic school, when you're the parent of a child that's being excluded from Catholic school for whatever reason, the days are long, when, especially if you have to explain to them, well, sorry, you can't, how do you explain it? Like, we have a son that's unable to go and his siblings do.
Right.
And it is one of the most difficult things in the world to try to explain to him, well, you know, it's just, everybody's a little bit different, bud, and you've got different opportunities, and it's, how do you do that? And I've spoken about this before. Einstein actually was kicked out of almost every school that he went to, and they all told his mom, we just can't help him.
Right.
And so what did she do? Do you know this story? Did you tell me that somebody told me this story?
I do. Yes, I remember the story. It wasn't me that told you, but
okay, somebody told it to me, and I'm going to get it wrong. But long story short, mom, Einstein, instead of telling him, you know, you're having a hard time learning. Mm-hmm. Instead, she said, look, you're so smart. The teachers don't, they can't help you. You're too smart for them. So you're going to have to stay home with me and I'm going to help you. Right. And wow, that mindset of you're so smart stuck with him. Mm-hmm. and he really turned out she was 100% correct.
Right.
What the teachers struggled with, you know, with whatever learning disabilities he had was just brilliance. He was so brilliant that they couldn't figure it out. Everybody learns differently. So I love this. And obviously there's different degrees of need.
Right.
And so what's your website, Renee? So we can plug it.
It's www.firefoundationcil.org.
Okay. Firefoundationcil.org.
Right.
All right. And we'll post that on our Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/truthculturelifepod. So okay. People can click on that if they want. And so if you're in Central Illinois listening to this and everybody probably knows a family or maybe they have a child that has some, you know, challenge that they have with respect to learning or academia or whatever, consider supporting the Fire Foundation of Central Illinois because it's such a great cause. And the more we can support them, the more they can grow and support our local schools. And that's just so imperative.
Right. Absolutely.
So anything big on the horizon, any big events coming up, anything else you want to talk about?
Yes, we're having our annual golf fundraiser in Bloomington, July 29th. Fun on the fairways. So that is our big fundraiser that we hope to draw all the community since Bloomington's kind of in between Champaign and Peoria. And then each partner school, St. Jude and in Champaign, they're going to have fundraisers on November 16th in the fall. So more information on those to come.
Those will all be on the same date.
Well, it just so happens that Peoria and Champaign are having it on the same
date. You're going to have to bi-locate then.
Yes. I'm going to have to be at two places at once. So we'll figure it out.
We'll get it. We'll find you a body double. There's enough time.
Yeah, right.
So, all right. Well, that's awesome. Well, we'll be sure to plug that as it gets closer too and make sure everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
This is great. I feel like, again, I can't stress enough, you know, how important inclusion is with respect to Catholic education. I have to say the word inclusion, it's being used in all sorts of different contexts now, but in this context, it's a good one.
Yeah.
You like it with respect to Catholic education.
Right. It's towards learning all learners. One thing I was going to say, you know, we have the kids like ours that don't get to, you know, they can't go to Catholic school. But the other thing that I'm learning is there are students at our schools that just with a small modification or accommodation could be so much more successful. Or like just recently, we provided some flexible seating to one of our partner schools. And that allows somebody maybe with ADHD or that just is a little bit busier body to kind of move around in their seat. And instead of trying to focus on sitting still and learning the lesson, they're able to do what their body needs. And then they can listen to the lesson instead of sitting in a chair with four legs, you know? Right. And it's just something simple as that, that makes all the difference in a child's perception of who they are and their success.
Yeah. I love that. Just little environmental changes that can be made to accommodate somebody. That's such a brilliant idea. And I've never thought of that before.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing, you know, that I think of when I think of my daughter, you know, she struggles to do everything that we all take for granted, like walking, climbing upstairs, literally everything is a challenge to her. But prayer has been so easy for her. And I think in her day, all she's being told in school is, come on, Adele, do this. No, don't do that. No, do this. And I would just love the idea of her being at a Catholic school and having those little moments of prayer where she can feel like, oh, I know how to do this, you know, just little wins all throughout the day. I feel and believe that that would make her so much more successful because, you know, as adults, we need that, right?
Yeah. And confidence. So, it all comes down to confidence. And it's interesting to me that you've said that about your daughter. I mean, our son, who's not able to go to the Catholic school either, out of all of our children, all of them are good they love prayer, but he is the most reverent, right? Loves go to adoration. He kneels with both knees when he enters the church. He always prays before every meal. Like, he's just such a holy little man. And it's just amazing. Like, he's probably the one kid that would appreciate the Catholic education the most. And he's the one that can't go.
Right.
And it's so heartbreaking. In fact, we're at the point where we're exploring with some other families, a micro school concept, mm-hmm. where we can create our own Catholic micro school, pool together some resources, hire a specialist that we need to come in and help. It's basically homeschooling with some supplemental assistance that is pooled by a few families. And I think we're probably going to do that because we want him to have that environment of other kids and peers and things that he's not able to have. And we don't want to do public school. That's not an option for us where we live. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I commend you, Fire Foundation of Central Illinois folks. You're listening to Truth, Culture, Life and Renee Purcell. Renee, I'll give you the last word. Anything else you want to share? And then we'll jump to our commercial break.
Well, I just think, thank you for having me. And I think that all kids, no matter what their learning ability is, they should be able to go to Catholic school. So that's what we're working for. Thank you so much.
I love it. You're welcome. And we'll be right back after this break.
Give praise to the Lord.
Thank you. Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon was a success. We reached our goal, and we still have donations arriving by mail and online. We thank all of our listeners and guests who participated and who made the event a fun and meaningful broadcast. Your generous donations show that you understand the importance and care about Catholic Radio. You, dear listeners, truly put the care in Carathon.
Three Kings Gifts has sacramental and seasonal gifts, religious medals, rosaries, and more on the College Avenue Epiphany Church campus in Normal. Three Kings Gifts is open 10 to 3:30 on Thursday and Friday, 8 to 1 on Sunday. Profits help charitable organizations.
Listeners support Catholic Spirit Radio in many different ways. Some write checks, others use credit cards. But did you know that you can also give Catholic Spirit Radio your old car, truck, boat, motorcycle, or RV, even if it's not working? Donating your vehicle is easy. We take care of everything from pickup to tax receipt. Just go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com to click on the Donate Your Vehicle link or call 866-628-CARS.
If you have some extra time, put those hours to use for the Lord. With Catholic Spirit Radio's growing radio network, we have three new behind-the-scenes volunteer positions. If you're interested, call the station. 309-807-2427.
Volunteers are specifically needed for each of these roles. First, an energetic and experienced event manager is needed to coordinate our spring and fall on-air fundraisers.
Give us a call if that's you.
Second, Catholic Spirit Radio needs 1 to 2 hours every 2 or 3 weeks from a volunteer or a team of two for lightweight general cleaning at our Normal location.
Give us a call if you and a friend are interested.
And third, we are in need of 1 to 2 spirit liaisons from each of these areas: Rockford, Harvard, Morris, DeKalb, Sycamore, Lincoln, Pontiac, and Clinton. These individuals will assist with informational tables at your local events.
Give us a call if you can help out.
Become part of our radio mission in 2024.
Volunteer at Catholic Spirit Radio.
309-807-2427.
Hello, this is Steve Gleason with your 1 minute tool for Catholic evangelism. Here's the question for your non-Catholic friend. Was the Catholic Church in existence as far back as the first 3 centuries? Well, here's your 3 best friendship tools for Catholic evangelism. Number one, baseball. In September 1845, the New York Knickerbocker Baseball Club was formally established and called baseball. Rules were set included the diamond-shaped infield, foul lines, and the 3-strike rule. But 7 years before that, in 1775, that game was already being played on schoolyards, well before it was ever called baseball. Secondly, the Apostolic Fathers, such as Tertullian, Clement, St. Ignatius, all wrote before 215 AD about the authority of the local bishop, and they used the name the Catholic Church, which already had the liturgy, the Eucharist, the readings, the relics, a hierarchy, and jurisdiction. And thirdly, my take. To fishermen, a dolphin was just a big fish until they were termed dolphins, but they were always dolphins, and baseball was baseball well before it was termed baseball. And you will love this. The early church was the Catholic Church well before Constantine the Great, the Nicene Creed, and your church history book.
Welcome back to Truth, Culture, Life. I am Royce Hood. Thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, if you haven't done so, be sure to go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com and download the app so you can listen to this and other programming anywhere you are. We're going to welcome our next guest, Connie Marshner. Welcome, Connie.
Greetings.
Thank you so much for coming on for us. And Connie was introduced to me by our friends over at Sophia Institute. She is an author and has a new book, Monastery and High Cross. And I'm going to let Connie just tell us a little bit about yourself. And then we want to hear about the book. And then we also want to talk about saints and scholars.
Thank you. Well, I was always active on Capitol Hill in pro-life causes for many, many years. But when COVID came and everything shut down, I learned about an online master's program at the University College Cork in Gaelic literature. And I had been studying Irish just to learn the language. And as I got into that program, I began to do more and more research. And that the result of that is this book. It's a popular version of my dissertation. And what it is a compendium and a survey of all the research over actually a couple hundred years that gives evidence of early Christianity in Ireland from Egypt. And that's kind of surprising to hear. And obviously there are no passports from the 4th century, but the trail left by these monks is archaeology and art, and then later on in the hymnody and the literature of Ireland, especially the Catholic literature. The Marian devotion in Ireland was earlier than anywhere else in Europe. Popular, non-liturgical hymnody, hymns to Mary were written, and poetry was written to her long before it was written in Europe. And that's kind of an evidence of the Eastern influence, because in the early days of the church, remember the church began in the East. Those early councils were in places like Nicaea and Constantinople. That was the East. And the devotion to Mary was strong and early. And, the Council of Nicaea, which defined Mary as the Mother of God, was reflecting what the people already loved. They already knew that Mary was the Mother of God, and that was just the church defining it. But anyhow, so all these evidences come into Ireland. For instance, in Agabalogue in County Cork, there is a well. Now, there are holy wells all over Ireland, and many of them have saints' names. And this one has always been called St. Olan's Well. Well, near St. Olan's Well is a stone a tower, a little stone slab that has carving on it in the Uum script. Now, that was a written language before Latin got to Ireland. And it was the only attempt of the ancient Celts to write anything down, because they didn't believe in writing. But when that got translated, it says, "Pray for St. Olan the Egyptian." The Egyptian. Now, Uum script went out of use at the end of the 4th century. So that means this Egyptian monk was there before the end of the 4th century. Patrick didn't come until the 5th. So anyhow, it stands to reason that there were Egyptian monks there, because in Egypt, there was a hotbed of literally bloody fights in the streets over theology.
Yeah. And, there still are in Ireland, I think, at times.
Well, they say that's religious, but it really isn't.
I'm just teasing.
That's socialism versus.
I married into an Irish family. And,
oh, aren't you lucky?
Yeah. So, and what about you? Are you Irish? Did you marry into
Irish? Well, my great grandmother was from Ireland.
Okay.
But I corrupted the genes and married a German.
Okay.
He was a Thomistic scholar. He was one of the founders of Christendom College. So.
Oh, beautiful. That's wonderful.
Credentials there.
Yeah. Good credentials. Absolutely. This is fascinating to me. And so the, is there a particular, obviously, like, I don't know how much we want to get into this now during this show, but it's interesting. So you had Jesus and the disciples, and the disciples went off to different world. And who was it that went to Egypt? Do you recall?
Oh, that was Saint, the liturgy is named after him.
Right. Was it Paul?
No, it wasn't Paul. No, was it?
Yeah.
Mark? Was it Mark? I think it was.
I'm gonna have to look it up.
Senior moment here.
Yeah, right. I know. I'm the same way. It's drawing a blank. But it's interesting because to this day, there's an Egyptian. Is it the Egyptian Coptic Church?
Yes. Yes.
Which I don't know that they're in communion.
They're not. Rome. They didn't follow Nicaea. The Council
right.
of Nicaea.
They were in communion with Rome at one point, I think. But
Rome was that wasn't the question in the early days because there wasn't Eastern or Western. It was all Christian. And the Great Sea, Alexandria, Egypt, was the intellectual center. And then there were others as well. But they were all in communion with each other. The patriarchs were all equals in those early days. So those are the ones we're talking about. Right. Then Rome had some problems with lots of illegal immigrants. And Rome kind of got totally preoccupied with just surviving. And Europe, continental Europe, lost the faith and lost much of civilization, lost much of its industry, trade, etc. But Ireland had never been part of Rome. It had never been part of the Roman Empire. Rome had never invaded Ireland. So Ireland preserved its Gaelic culture, but the Gaelic culture had already absorbed the early Christian culture. And that's what makes it so delightful. I'm a Byzantine Catholic. I'm a Melkite Catholic. So, you know, I'm familiar with the Byzantine customs and the Byzantine prayers and the Byzantine feasts. And to find them in 6th and 7th century Ireland was just such a thrill.
That's amazing. Has anybody else attempted to connect these dots of the early Christian heritage in Ireland that you're aware of?
Well, I don't know anybody who has done it with the serious academic. I mean, Father McNamara, who's the head of the Irish Biblical Association, has called for more study on Hiberno-Coptic studies, it's called. But in order to do original research, you have to know ancient Coptic, ancient Irish, ancient Latin. I don't know those things. So I've done secondary research. I have done just surveys of everything I could find, following every footnote, going back to the 1700s. Where there was evidence of this scene and nobody quite knew what to make of it. And I kind of pulled it all together in this book.
Good for you. What an undertaking.
Oh, it was a great joy. I mean, you know, when you were sitting there on COVID, you had nothing but your computer. It was just my happy place.
Right. You know, you were far more productive than I was during COVID. I was trying to find toilet paper and things like that. And you're busy at work writing an amazing book. So good for you.
Thank you. Well, yeah, thanks to University College Cork for having the online master's degree program that I could tag on to.
Oh, that's it. That's beautiful. And looking this up, it looks like St. Mark was...
Mark. Woohoo!
Mark. Yeah, that was our answer for... I have a little sound effect we play sometimes. If we do a question, we get the answer right. But in this case, I didn't know the answer, so I'm not going to play it. But anyway, okay, so I love the fact that... What was the saint again? Was it Eunice, did you say, with his name?
Oh, St. Olen, O-L-A-N.
Olen, I've never heard of him. Is there anything written about St. Olen in any of the research that you found, apart from
the existence of the well? That's all anybody knows.
That's it.
Now, throughout Ireland, there are hundreds, literally, of holy wells with saints' names on them, and nobody knows anything about those saints. There are traditions and customs. When Rome got around to creating the canonization process in the 1300s, I think it was, the way that was set up said that anybody who has been venerated for more than 100 years in their locality is grandfathered into sainthood. So the Irish people have always been devoted to these holy places. You know, at different times, the church regarded them as rather, those are rather obscure customs. We're not sure we approve of people going to pray at these holy wells, but that was the Irish tradition. So, you know, they were and around Ireland. There are hundreds of places with the name Dysart, D-I-S-E-A-R-T, in the title. Well, a Dysart, that's Irish for desert. And those would have been places where solitary monks would have built themselves a little bothy, a little hut to be away from the world and to pray.
Wow. You know, it'd be fascinating to see if you could, obviously, like you said, you don't read, you know, the Coptic or the Egyptian or whatever the language would have been for this particular fourth century monk. But it'd be interesting to go back to go to Egypt and to see if there's any references to this particular individual in any of their early writings.
Well, some of the Coptic websites do acknowledge that these were their people.
Awesome. Very cool.
Some of the Orthodox with a capital O, some of the Orthodox folks also see this connection. And I did find a couple Orthodox books written about this that kind of explained it, but they didn't have the footnotes, so I had to go find the footnotes.
That's so cool. So for those of you that are just tuning in, you're listening to Truth Culture Live, and we're joined by Connie Marshner, who's the author of the new book, Monastery and High Cross. And as you've been hearing, she has sort of uncovered and unraveled Christianity in Ireland before St. Patrick. And it's fascinating. Connie, can you tell us a little bit about the Norman invasion and how the church was different in Europe elsewhere?
Right. Well, no, I don't mean to take anything away from St. Patrick. He does deserve full credit for converting the island, for converting the Irish. The Egyptians were there before him. They may have been an influence on why he set up a monastic system as he did, which was always the Irish church up until the Norman invasion. When the Normans came, they were still all still one church. They were very much in union with Rome. They came over from England. In fact, King Henry II had the permission of the Pope to invade Ireland because it wasn't practicing the faith the way Rome was, which meant they had a different date for Easter because the Irish calculations were different. They were very big into calculations, and they had a different date for Easter. Doctrinally, they were totally in line, but that was Henry's excuse. He wanted in land. So the Normans come over, and they tried to impose Roman customs. Ireland was never against Rome. It just had not been connected. You know, there weren't airplanes and high-speed travel. So there hadn't been much communication. So the Irish had their own customs built upon the fathers, but not a whole lot of communication with Rome. And so the Normans tried to enforce, hey, we're going to set up dioceses, not your monasteries. I mean, the Irish church was very heavily monastic. Bishops would live in monasteries, but they'd be under the authority of the abbot. And that didn't square too well with the ideas of organization. But there were no cities in Ireland until after the Vikings. There was no reason for cities. It was the Vikings who invaded in the 9th century, who wanted to set up trading posts, and those became places like Dublin and Cork and Waterford, the places we know of. Those started out as Vikings settlements. And then eventually the Vikings became converted too. And then they also wanted connections with England, which meant connections with Rome. But it all evolved gradually. And the Irish Catholicism, as we know it, didn't really get set as we know it until the Reformation, when it was underground. And when it was a capital offense to be a Catholic priest, there were Irish colleges in Europe that trained priests for Ireland. The most notable was Louvain, which was run by the Franciscans, and Salamanca in Spain, which was run by the Jesuits. And they trained Irish boys to become priests who then snuck back into the country. And those people, by then, they brought into Ireland the Council of Trent Reformations. And that was the faith then that was built in secret during the penal days in Ireland. And that really cemented the connections between the Irish Church and Rome. There never had been hostility, there never had been divergence in doctrine, but there just hadn't been communication.
This is, wow, just so, you are just a wealth of information, and I just want to let our listeners know. So you're listening to Connie Marshner, and she pursued a master's degree in Gaelic literature at the University of College Cork, and that gave her the opportunity to do in-depth research, which is with Monastery and High Cross is drawn from that, her dissertation. And you're a teacher? Is it a teacher of Gaelic? Is that correct?
I do teach the Irish language, yes. So if you want to learn Irish, get in touch with me. I do Zoom classes.
Why don't, can you tell us something, tell us something in Irish or in Gaelic?
Buíochas leggia. That means thanks be to God.
Say it again for us. I was talking.
Buíochas leggia. Thanks be to God.
Oh, that's beautiful. I am not going to try to repeat that at the moment, but when I listen to this in post-production, I'm going to practice that and try to get it right next time. So, but that's great. What's next for you? Okay. So, by the way, we're going to go to a break in a minute. We've only got another minute left and I'm hoping you'll be able to stick around, and I want to bring Renee back, and I'm hoping we can talk about saints and scholars and education a bit, because I think that's somewhat related. You both are working on
I would love to, because there's a lot of reason to hope for the faith in Ireland, and we can talk about that after the break.
And maybe we can learn what you're doing in Ireland and what we're trying to do here in the U.S. and connect some dots. So that would be great. Well, this is great. So your new book, again, Monastery and High Cross, that is available now, if I'm not mistaken, and that's available at Sophia Institute. We'll post the link to their website on our website, but it's just sophiainstitute.com.
Yep. And also on Amazon too, but Sophia is a better place to buy it.
Okay. And you also have your own website. Is that ConnieMarshner.com?
ConnieMarshner.com. Yeah.
And is that where you offer the online Gaelic lessons?
No, that's from Shenandoah Gaeltacht. That's another.
Okay.
And that's not a website. That's just an email address. But no, at ConnieMarshner.com is where I'll be posting reviews as they come in about the book.
Oh, good for you. That's great. I love this. Stick around. You're listening to Truth Culture Life at Catholic Spirit Radio, and we will be right back.
Thank you. Catholic Spirit Radio's Carathon was a success. We reached our goal, and we still have donations arriving by mail and online. We thank all of our listeners and guests who participated and who made the event a fun and meaningful broadcast. Your generous donations show that you understand the importance and care about Catholic Radio. You, dear listeners, truly put the care in Carathon.
Three Kings Gifts has sacramental and seasonal gifts, religious medals, rosaries, and more on the College Avenue Epiphany Church campus in Normal. Three Kings Gifts is open 10 to 3:30 on Thursday and Friday, 8 to 1 on Sunday. Profits help charitable organizations.
Listeners support Catholic Spirit Radio in many different ways. Some write checks, others use credit cards. But did you know that you can also give Catholic Spirit Radio your old car, truck, boat, motorcycle, or RV, even if it's not working? Donating your vehicle is easy. We take care of everything from pickup to tax receipt. Just go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com to click on the Donate Your Vehicle link or call 866-628-CARS.
If you have some extra time, put those hours to use for the Lord. With Catholic Spirit Radio's growing radio network, we have 3 new behind-the-scenes volunteer positions. If you're interested, call the station. 309-807-2427.
Volunteers are specifically needed for each of these roles. First, an energetic and experienced event manager is needed to coordinate our spring and fall on-air fundraisers.
Give us a call if that's you.
Second, Catholic Spirit Radio needs 1 to 2 hours every 2 or 3 weeks from a volunteer or a team of 2 for lightweight general cleaning at our Normal location.
Give us a call if you and a friend are interested.
And third, we are in need of 1 to 2 spirit liaisons from each of these areas: Rockford, Harvard, Morris, DeKalb, Sycamore, Lincoln, Pontiac, and Clinton. These individuals will assist with informational tables at your local events.
Give us a call if you can help out.
Become part of our radio mission in 2024.
Volunteer at Catholic Spirit Radio.
309-807-2427.
Hello, this is Steve Gleason with your 1 minute tool for Catholic evangelism. Here's the question for your non-Catholic friend. Was the Catholic Church in existence as far back as the first 3 centuries? Well, here's your 3 best friendship tools for Catholic evangelism. Number 1, baseball. In September 1845, the New York Knickerbocker Baseball Club was formally established and called baseball. Rules were set included a diamond-shaped infield, foul lines, and the 3-strike rule. But 7 years before that, in 1775, that game was already being played on schoolyards, well before it was ever called baseball. Secondly, the Apostolic Fathers, such as Tertullian
Julian, Clement, St. Ignatius all wrote before 215 AD about the authority of the local bishop, and they used the name the Catholic Church, which already had the liturgy, the Eucharist, the readings, the relics, a hierarchy, and jurisdiction. And thirdly, my take. To fishermen, a dolphin was just a big fish until they were termed dolphins, but they were always dolphins. And baseball was baseball well before it was termed baseball. And you will love this. The early church was the Catholic Church well before Constantine the Great, the Nicene Creed, and your church history book.
Welcome back to Truth Culture Life. I am Royce Hood. Thank you so much for tuning in. And wow, what an interesting show. We have had Renee Purcell on, who's joining us again for this last segment. And we also have Connie Marshner, who's the author of a new book published through Sophia Institute. And Connie, the reason why I wanted to have you both back on during this last segment is there's some similarity here. You are working on the Saints and Scholars Foundation, which supports faithful Catholic education in secular Ireland. And that's saintsandscholars.us for anybody that is interested in learning about that. And there's probably some overlap here because Renee is working on issues related to Catholic education here in the U.S. So I thought we'd just have a talk.
Lovely. Now, Catholic education in the U.S. is about 40 years ahead of Catholic education in Ireland. In Ireland, for reasons of history, the government has always funded education. And beginning in the 1920s, when Ireland got its independence from England, religious orders did the teaching with government money. And that system worked okay as long as there were religious orders and they were faithful. And that has fallen apart in the last 30, 40 years. And now the government funds all education. They don't teach catechism in the schools. They don't. In fact, you're not allowed to have a crucifix on the wall. So they follow totally the wokeness of the European Union. So what are faithful Catholic parents to do? Well, in Ireland, in Cork, there's right now an academy called Mater Dei Academy Cork, and it is a pioneer. That is to say, the first one in Ireland of independent, parent-run, faithful Catholic classical education. Independent means no funding from the government, no funding from the church or any religious order. Now, as you know, Renee, in America, there have been independent Catholic schools, parent-run Catholic schools in Ireland now for a generation or two. But it's a brand new thing in Ireland. And it's a challenge because the Irish people are not in the habit and don't have the resources to pay for education. So it's a new model totally, because what Padraig Cantillon Murphy is the name of the founder, what he's doing is he is offering tuition-free education to the students. He asks parents to pay what they can, which ends up being about 40% of the costs. And then he depends upon benefactors to cover the difference. That's where Saints and Scholars Foundation comes in. At saintsandscholars.us, you can be a supporter, and we then send teachers and whatever over to Ireland, to the Mater Dei Academy Cork. But it really is a new model of Catholic education, and the faithful bishops in Ireland are watching it very carefully. In fact, there's going to be a conference this summer, because this might be a solution to their problem, because the bishops realize that these government schools have saints' names, but they're anything but Catholic. And so there is really a lot of hope in there, because the people in Ireland want to be Catholic. They, you know, the folks who came of age during the scandals kind of don't want anything to do with the church. But the people who are 20s and under, they don't know the church. They don't hate it. They don't have resentment. They just don't know. So there is hope for Catholicism in Ireland. The faith is not dead. It just needs education.
You know, I am.
Conversation.
No, this is great. I learned so much as hearing you. It's phenomenal. And I think about an old saying that we used to talk about in law school: if you take Caesar's coin, he owns you. Is that the reason why there's no crucifixes? Because they're taking government money. So in other words,
government has become anti-religious.
Right. So that's it. You take government funds, you're not allowed to be religious.
You're not allowed to be religious in content. You have to take government books. You have to take government rules. government wokeness, government sex ed. I mean, the whole nine yards. Oh,
and now we see, you know, Ireland. I've always thought of Ireland as a pro-life nation, and that has changed fundamentally with respect to the votes and the polls and the different things. I was on an X space last night. X is like the new, you know, the Twitter. And there is a doctor from the UK. I think he's of Irish descent. He was talking about how, they've noticed that, and he brought up such a great point. Polls and votes. You could have the same poll or bill or measure, and depending on how you word it, will vote differently. And so they are so crafty with the pro-choice and the abortion legislation and those bills. You know, do you want women to die is a question. Well, no. Hey, the pro-choice bill just won.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of a misrepresentation. Like, you're not giving all the facts. Anyway, Padre Murphy, I would love to connect with Padre Murphy, because I think about what Renee is doing with special ed. And obviously, like you said, they're about 40 years behind. But wow, like, that'd be amazing if within that Saints and Scholars fund, there could be an earmark for special ed, whether it's the chair for the kid that needs a special chair or a training for a student. The other thing that popped into my head is I think about Chesterton Academy, which is growing here in the U.S. That's a parent-run lay apostolate that is booming.
Oh, yeah, they're booming.
Right. And imagine for a moment how cool would it be to be a young Catholic that wants to go into education, to get your degree, and then to immediately be able to apply to go teach for a year in Ireland at this school?
Well, believe it or not, if you happen to be a STEM major, science, technology, or math, and would like to do that, and you're within a year of graduation, you can get a visa, and Saints and Scholars Foundation, it can fund a STEM student to go to Ireland either next year or the following year to teach at Mater Dei Academy. That we have the Saints and Scholars Fellowship, and every year we send somebody over to teach there. And this, it sounds so amazing, but the first year we did it, Padraig asked, could you please find somebody who can teach English grammar? Because English grammar has not been taught in the Irish government schools for 40 years.
Wow.
I mean, that tells you how bad, you know, Ireland adopted the John Dewey philosophy of education for life, never mind thinking. And so their own education is just pathetic. But I want to say something hopeful to you, Royce, because you mentioned the referendums and stuff in Ireland. And yes, the Constitution has now gone anti-life, etc. But just less than a month ago now, the latest effort by the woke contingent to change the Constitution and take women out of the Constitution and take the family out of the Constitution was resoundingly defeated. And the Prime Minister resigned the day after.
That's great. It's good to see that.
There's real hope there. People, you know,
when people are given accurate information and accurate, you know, with facts and so forth, they generally, I feel like, most people come to the correct conclusion on things, and it's just a matter of getting the right information to people. Maybe with those referendums that you're talking about, Renee, what about it? Would you like? How about we organize a trip over to this school in Ireland? What do you think?
That'd be awesome. I'm up for it. I am half Irish. I'm a McGrath. So
oh well,
there you go.
I'm sorry. I doesn't imagine what you're saying, because I had a child who had special needs, and there was only one Catholic school in my diocese at the time where they had any kind of a special, accommodation. So I resonate with the need, and it's so real, and it's so hard for parents to realize what the problem is and to figure out that it can be dealt with. There are a lot of barriers. You're doing heroic work.
Renee, do you feel like, I mean, obviously, you know, your focus is Central Illinois and the Fire Foundation, I think, was started out of, was it St. Louis or Kansas City?
Kansas City.
But wow, maybe there's something there for some, you know, even we should even almost have like a global Catholic education summit at some point where we, because I think about, I know for a fact in Africa, for example, I spoke with somebody, I don't remember if it was on the show or maybe it was at the Law of Life Summit, But anyway, this guy, he's actually, I believe he was a doctor from the UK. It goes down to Africa and different countries, Rwanda and so forth. And some of these kids walk 2 to 3 miles. Some of them walk 10 miles a day to get to school. And they're Catholic schools, but there's one little parish. It's like a building with no air conditioning, no doors, no windows. And they go every day. Walking through the jungle, right? I would totally like die in that jungle. I'd be eaten by something, and they just do it. So how about it, ladies? Let's do a global Catholic education summit. What do you think?
I'm all for it.
I'll do it. The fire is catching. It's definitely spreading nationwide. And I think it is a matter of time before it becomes something that's connected.
It is. It has to be, because the need is growing. More and more children are, whether it's because of medical care or wrong medical care or environmental factors or what it is, more and more kids do legitimately. I mean, everybody gets diagnosed with something in the public schools. Some of that's excessive, but there are more and more. And we're recognizing neurodiversity. People learn in different ways. Exactly. And what used to be called a behavior problem isn't necessarily that if you're in the right environment. Just like you were citing earlier with Einstein.
Well, I struggle. I mean, look, I was diagnosed with dyslexia when I was young, ADD, the whole nine yards. And I was told in public school, and I didn't go to a great public school at the time. And I was told that, you're probably never really going to be able to do much with your career, with your life. I remember I told a guidance counselor in high school, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, well, I think I'll be a lawyer. If I'm not a rock star, then I'll be a lawyer. And he kind of laughs. He's like, yeah, you're probably never going to get into law school. And literally a guidance counselor told me that. And we lost Connie. Hopefully she'll come back in. Oh. But wow, like that confidence, the lack of understanding, and it turned out at some point things clicked for me, and I figured out, I realized how I learned.
Right.
No one could tell me how I learned.
Yeah.
I had to figure it out on my own. And it's amazing. What I always considered to be like challenges turned out to be like superpowers, the ability to multitask.
Right.
So being ADD, I am constantly working on multiple things at once. As long as I keep myself organized and I have goals, I put things on my calendar, I've got my calendar booking system, there's things that I use, I am extremely efficient, and I get more done in a day or two than most people probably do in weeks. And I've got everything from film to music, and I'm not bragging, but what I figured out, I was told was a detriment,
right.
I feel like it was a superpower. I just had to figure out how to harness it.
Exactly. Yeah. There's, generally education's taught for, people that can fit into a small circle. And if you don't fit into that circle, then you kind of have to figure it out on your own. We have our daughter with special needs, but we also have our boys who maybe don't get challenged, they need more. They do fine in the circle, but they need more. And that's the whole thing is, kind of the universal design for learning is teaching where kids are at.
I love it. This has been such a great conversation.
Training teachers is the key.
Teachers and then like you were talking about, neurodivergence and things like that. Connie, you dropped out for a minute, but I was saying,
sudden power failure. Thank God it came back.
No. Oh yeah. Welcome back. I was just saying for me, like I figured out how I learned at some point. And I ended up going to law school. I ended up doing all these amazing things with my career. And so what I was told was a detriment as a youth. It destroyed my confidence, by the way. When I graduated high school, I had zero confidence in my ability to be successful academically. Mm-hmm. Turned out that so many people were wrong, and they weren't wrong because they were mean. They just didn't understand. And I figured it out. And now it's like, wow. And so I love what you're doing in Ireland. It's sorely needed. Renee, I love what you're doing with special ed and inclusion. And like I said, if you two are at game, I don't know who else would be on it, but I'd love to have a representative from Ireland, the US, maybe Africa, Europe, Asia, and literally do like a online global education summit.
That'd be awesome.
Where we could literally just talk and compare notes. We could do it. Yeah, go ahead, Renee.
Well, because I'd be curious if Ireland's been, you know, government run all this time, and now they have this Catholic school, are they clumping in all the learners? Probably, because that's the only way they know, right? But now they're...
Well, what do you mean clumping in all the learners?
You mean inclusion? With, yeah. Like, not excluding anybody with special needs?
Right. I wonder...
That's a good question. I don't know what the government schools are doing on that. I mean, Padraig School at this point, it's only its fourth, fifth year now. Very small. So I don't think they've got the bandwidth to do that.
But it's interesting.
They're putting the liturgy a lot into the learning, which is interesting. But anyhow.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. There's a lot there we don't know. And that's, I think that would be, it would be fun to kind of have a conversation with some folks that are representing different areas of the world, compare notes, figure out what we can do to support each other, brainstorm some of these ideas. And wow, there's the education. I mean, look, our world is so messed up right now. You know, like we're like our generations are, you know, it's time for us at some point, we have to hand the torch down. And so our only hope is these kids that are getting educated, that they start making some good decisions on the geopolitical level and so forth.
Well, if the Irish bishops do come on board to help the Mater Dei model, then that will become a huge phenomenon in Ireland. So I just pray that that happens.
I hope it happens. I hope it, and I hope if that does happen, Connie, that it doesn't bring with it red tape. I know that here in the U.S., I've seen become supported by a particular, you know, diocesan entity or diocese even, and then within a year or two, it's like it's just a bundle of red tape, and it's hard. It becomes like molasses. Sometimes lay apostolates can do more independently. So I would suggest to that Padre school, to the extent they can partner with the bishops, but maintain some lay control, that might be a good way to.
Oh, that's part of their model is lay control.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
The church embraces lay apostolates generally because the lay apostolates do so much. So that's great. Listen, we're basically out of time. I just want to thank you both for joining Truth Culture Life. And again, you're listening to Connie Marshner, who's the author of an incredible new book, Monastery and High Cross, available at SophiaInstitute.com. We also have Renee Purcell from the Fire Foundation of Central Illinois. And that Fire Foundation, is it CL.org?
CIL.
CIL.org. I'll post both of those links on our Facebook page. Ladies, thank you so much for joining.
Train my hands for war. My fingers for battle.